again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you today with a conversation that's stretching about as far around the globe as I can get. My colleague from Pakistan, whose voice you'll hear in a moment, is exactly 12 hours ahead of me. We'll be talking about a paper that she and her colleague have coming out in the July 2018 issue of Medical Education entitled Why Women Go to Medical College But Fail to Practice Medicine. The voice you're going to hear belongs to Farhad Muazzam, who is a surgeon and professor and head of the Center of Biomedical Ethics and Culture in the Sindh Institute of Urology and Transplantation in Karachi, Pakistan. Farhad, thank you first of all for chatting with me. I understand from our very preliminary conversation that the center you're leading is the only one of its type in Pakistan. So maybe I can ask you to say a bit more by way of introduction in terms of what your center focuses on and how you're trying to develop the field of bioethics within your country.
Okay. Hi, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be having this conversation with you. The acronym that we use for our center is CBEC. So it's a Center of Biomedical Ethics and Culture. So CBEC essentially was inaugurated about 13 years ago and is still the only center in Pakistan, in fact, in South Asia, that focuses on both capacity building but also research in areas related to bioethics, including medical bioethics, and culture, because I think the two are intricately connected, because bioethics cannot do unless you also study the local existing realities, the cultural realities and the value system. So that's what we try and do through our programs and through the research we do in CBEC.
And your response to that question, I think, really reflects on this paper that we're going to discuss, in that you mentioned the local realities and the cultural influences. The title, Why Women Go to Medical College But Fail to Practice Medicine, I think would make most people think of workforce issues. What is it that put this in the bioethical sphere from your perspective?
Okay, the reason that my faculty associate Swaliha and I decided to do this was, the first thing is, I'm a physician myself. I'm a surgeon who initially did medical education in Pakistan. And when I went to medical school, and that was some time ago, there was a quota system. There were only 20% of the class could be women. Subsequently, however, the law was changed and the admission to medical colleges is now done on merit alone. And therefore, as a result, one of the things that I find now is that a very large number of medical students now, close to 70% of students within Pakistan, these are medical students, are women. So this has been the case for almost two decades, and yet increasingly what we see is, so overall we are now graduating 14,000 or more physicians every year, and of them around 65 to 70% of them are women. But our ratio of physicians per population still remains 0.83 per thousand population. If you compare that to Canada, it's 2.2. So one of the issues is the ethical issue that comes up here is everybody is happy. I think men and women alike should be able to do what they wish to do. But on the other hand, medicine is something that you do for your society and for your culture. And for people around you, you serve people. So the big issue that came up, therefore, was that women now have the right to go to medical college, and should they not, therefore, also have some responsibility to pay back to society?
And I presume this isn't the first time you've thought about this problem either. It sounds like you've been challenged by some of these issues in Pakistan for many years now. What did you come into the study anticipating in terms of some of the reasons why you might see that disproportionate transitioning into the workforce?
Well, I think one of the reasons we became interested in the study, well, first thing, of course, because I'm a physician and this is of obvious interest to me, But the other thing is that this phenomena of more women graduating but not practicing has been picked up by the press, by the popular press. And so there's been, over the last several years, a lot of articles written about how women essentially go into medical college in order to get better marriage proposals. Marriages are still kind of arranged, not completely, but the family plays a big role. So the common issue that would come up, well, so women just go into medical college because they want to get better marriage proposals. And clearly this matter was far more complex and nobody had really looked at this in a proper fashion. What are the other issues that perhaps are making them not practice medicine? And because this has obvious practical issues too, you can't fix a problem if you consider this a problem without understanding it.
Mm-hmm. So you brought together a group of women who are currently in medical school or recent graduates. What were your inclusion criteria in terms of who could best inform you around this issue?
Yeah, well, the study that we conducted essentially is with finally medical students, and this is both male and female. We talked about it, and I think down the road somewhere, a similar study needs to be done with women after they graduate. But we felt that finally a medical school is when students are more or less making plans as to what they are going to do when they graduate. They're around that time. So we felt that our study needed really to first begin with final year medical students, and that's what we did. And we did this in Karachi, and we have both private medical schools and public, which is government-run medical schools, and we felt it would be important to speak to students from both. And Karachi is the largest city with a lot of medical colleges, and that's why we decided to do the study here using final year medical students.
And the decision to focus at that level seems to have been reinforced by virtue of the statements that suggest that even at that stage, your participants were experiencing what you called role strain. Can you clarify for people listening what role strain is and why it played a prominent role in your findings?
Yeah, well, role strain, essentially, to put it in very simple words, all of us were expected to play certain roles in society, and the roles that we play in society, sometimes they're fine, but on the other hand, there are roles that we're expected to play which produce strain, ambivalence, and stress amongst us. And this particular role theory has been used in the past to study particularly women and their roles in society and the strains that they go through and how do they handle those strains. So that's also part of this theory. And we felt that as these were young women who were on the cusp of moving into a role, which was that of a physician, something they wanted to do, but at the same time, they are in a culture and in a society where they are also expected to play another role, which is that of the wife, the mother, and the homemaker. So in this case, therefore, the issue was to talk to these women and see if we could identify how they saw these two roles. Do they conflict? Do they come together? And what are the ways in which they think they can handle it or that they can suggest ways in which it would be easier for them? Because there's no question there's a strain between the two roles, which is, I think, compounded in our part of the world, although I think it's pretty universal.
Well, and was that strain experienced to a greater extent as these individuals got closer to graduation, or did they come in anticipating it and really never really intend to practice medicine?
You see, this is the interesting social finding. And what we discovered was when we interviewed them, these are young women. Pakistan is a very local society. And adult children, boys and girls, live with their parents. It's parents who support them through medical college. So they pay for them. They are living at home, actually, with their parents while they are going through their education. Once they get married, the sons will stay on with their families, with their parents, whereas women will get married and move away to the husband's family. So one of the things that we found very interesting was we had this rather bright-eyed, enthusiastic young women who went into medical college, and we enter medical college earlier because we don't have the 4 years of pre-med education. So they enter medical college and they want to be doctors. They want to go out. They want to serve people. And this is the time when they are probably around 18 or 19. It's only in the third year, and that's around when they're a little over 20, when their marriage proposals begin to come to the family. And as many of them said, it's when they hit the third or fourth year that they suddenly realize that, oh, I'm going to get married. And now for women, the issue is when they will get married, they will be moving out of their own households into the households of the husbands. And as our paper reports, some of them talked of classmates who got married in the final year, and they were married and they saw the changes in them. These women began to miss classes, could not really focus enough on the studies the way they should be. This kind of a sudden realization, as our paper shows, on the part of these young women that, wait a minute, now here is our other role to which we must pay attention.
You just alluded to the notion that the particulars might be very context specific, but the feeling of strain might be a bit more universal. And there's a risk with a study that's focused on the particulars of one context that we overlook some of the more general lessons that have been learned. So let me ask you what your advice would be in terms of supporting women or other groups that may be feeling considerable role strain as they try to find the right career path for themselves.
It's a complicated thing. The one thing that I think is really essential is that within the role strain theory, one of the things is that women then look for support systems so that if some of the part of the role that they have to play, they can delegate elsewhere. And one of the very practical things that came out, and this is something that has been reported not just from Pakistan, but also places like the United States and Canada, which is that women who do then choose to go ahead and practice medicine or to go for higher training, there is no support. I'm talking of support now from the medical community, from the way we run our postgraduate training programs, the lack of ways in which to enable women, even the way our training programs are structured, they're very rigorous because clearly, and I've gone through a surgical training myself, medicine is largely and still is a profession that is molded by men. And it is a profession, therefore, that has all the values and the form which is male. And that becomes very difficult. So I think one of the issues is for the immediate thing, and this has been talked about in your part of the world, is the same thing. We need to begin to deal with it. So for example, if somebody wants to do surgery or OBGYN, to have 5 years of training, in which is intensive training, becomes almost impossible for a woman to do. So if she has a young child, is there some way in which two women can be taken against one job so that it may take them longer to finish their training? And this doesn't have to be surgery, it could be any of the others, but they get through sharing one position. The other thing, of course, is that, remember, by the time our women, this is in their 20s when they graduate, this is the childbearing age. And socially and culturally, they are expected to get married. And I need to be very clear on one thing for those who are listening to this, that I do not believe that in our part of the world, all the women are forced into marriage. They do see that as a very important part of their lives. And they do take a great deal of pleasure and actually pride in being mothers. And in a patriarchal society, the mother has a lot of power. In fact, power that can veto a lot of things that the patriarch would want to do. So going back to the question, therefore, there should be a way to help women. And a lot of the women we spoke to had that stress, the strain that we're talking about. So in the immediate, and this is not easy, but I think in the immediate solution, whether it's country like yours or a country like mine, we need to understand women do wish to be mothers and they take pride in that, but they also want to have a profession in medicine. So how do you solve that? The longer issue is the issue of changes that would come eventually, hopefully, within societies and within cultures, because no society or culture is stationary, as you know. That's going to take time. And in that, I think one of the things that may help is the economics. So that now if you want your children to go to good schools, often even in Pakistan, there are both parents, mothers, sometimes having to work part-time or full-time. And maybe down the road, that will also be another reason why families would be more receptive to wives and mothers working, perhaps even in medicine, even if it is part-time.
You've reinforced both complexity and the importance of attending to these issues, and it's very clear that we're fortunate to have leaders like yourself who are trying to shine a light on it and better understand these issues so that, again, whether it's women in Pakistan or other groups in Canada or anywhere else, that we're paying attention not only to the need to create competent and highly functioning practitioners, but also do it in a way that has some humanism to it as well. So I will thank you for that advice. And again, as always, have to direct listeners to the paper for more of the details. But if you're interested, you'll find it in the July 2018 issue of Medical Education. The article we've been discussing is Why Women Go to Medical College but Fail to Practice Medicine. And the first author who you've been listening to is Farhad Muazzam. Thank you once again. I very much appreciate you taking the time to chat with me.
Oh, I enjoyed that. Thank you very much. Privileged talking to you. Thanks.